All right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the session to be presented by Dr. Zhao, Senior Lecturer at UNSW, and Dorothy Cheng. I'll just introduce the speakers first, and then they're presenting a very fascinating topic today on a topic that's very important in Australian society broadly. It's far broader than life insurance. Mental health and physical comorbidity, implications for life insurance. And I hope we get some really valuable, good discussions and questions at the end, because that's where a lot of the value is. So Dr. Zhao is a senior lecturer at UNSW. Welcome and thank you. Dorothy Cheng is a FIAA and CIRA with over a decade of experience in life insurance pricing, and she's a working mother. She tells me the three-year-old. That's hard work. She has specialised in disability and life products, bringing both technical rigour and product sustainability. Her research conducted with Zhao from UNSW applies Kaplan-Meier survival analysis to mental health claims in IP and TPD insurance. This work is driven by a genuine interest in understanding how the industry can design fairer, more sustainable outcomes for policyholders. Please also submit plenty of questions on the apps, and I'll now hand over to the speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Damien. Thank you for a kind introduction. And hi, everyone. I'm Xiao. I'm from UNSW. So this project is a collaboration project as part of an initiative supported by our UNSW Business School Business Insight Fund. So basically, we wanted to do more research can have some public impact at UNSW. So this is one of the projects we identify. We can help Australian insurance market a little bit using some of our university resources and to help this to build the sustainability. So the project we're doing is mental health and physical comorbidity and trying to build some implications for life industry. So I'm Xiao, I'm from UNSW, and this is my collaborator, Dorothy. So this is an agenda we're going to follow today. So at the first, I will give you some introduction. And of course, you all aware how mental health has become an important issue in Australian society and also have big impact on the insurance industry. And basically, we'll see overview of the mental health challenges, not only in Australia, but also in some of the related research in US, and also some research objectives and methodologies, like what kind of research questions we can answer using the public data set, and also the data source we actually rely on, the Australian Mental Health Survey data set, like sponsored by the Australian government, and also the mental health trends, like basically we'll give you some exploratory data analysis and present our key findings, especially using the prevalence rate and how we convert the prevalence rate to the age of onset, trying to build a whole pattern. And then we actually analyze the mental, physical health comorbidity patterns, which is very actually surprising finding that basically we find that mental health problems is not a standalone problem, but we actually need to understand the whole picture, like whole different dot points related to the mental health problem. And also Dorothy then will present about it, especially because of her industry background, we'll see some of the particular challenges on sustainability issues on the insurance product design, and also we'll provide our policy recommendations and what's going on and, you know, what we can do going forward. So the opportunities for early intervention and prevention. So basically, the first thing, if you can, there's only one thing you can take away from our presentation today, is that a lot of mental health issues that they arise, they happen at an early young age. So basically, if we can design some intervention problem to help these people at early young age, that would definitely help a lot. So this is the evidence-based insights we draw from the Australia's National Mental Health Survey. So, of course, here are some very surprising data that we actually find from the Australian societies related to the mental health challenges. So basically, you can see that 1 in 5 Australians reported they affected the mental health distress disorders annually. And the lifetime, basically, if we take a look at the whole life cycle of the ordinary citizens in Australia, that 42% of them have reported there has been some of the mental distress during their lifetime. And it is very, very, very important finding is that 75% of these issues has happened before, which is we call that at the onset age before age 25. And mental disorders, we can see that these are not random events. These are like early life happening, but it has long impact, especially like long tail liabilities when we talk about the insurance products. So it is also very, very different from other cancer or disease because it is chronic, it is recurrent, and it is also persistent. So people who have suffered mental stress before, they can happen again. So this is not like the discrete injuries, like some physical conditions. And also we now already know that this is an important driver for a lot of IP and TBD claims in Australia. And this is also the huge risk is actually front-loaded. So this is disproportionately concentrated in some young adulthood. So we have seen that insurance products have been taking a hit in the claims, but also how we can support people. Like we can just not, of course, not deny all the claims, but we wanted to support to have a comprehensively designed program to support the people who suffer with mental health challenges from the beginning. So here are some related research. So if you actually attended some of the Actuaries Institute event last year, you can see that we already have raised huge awareness in the Actuaries Institute. So there is a paper, related paper, has been an inspiration for us as a mental health financial safety net. And in this paper, you can see that our brilliant mental health working group have actually identified all the key stakeholders in Australia government, that basically how we can help people and to build sustainability in mental health insurance products. And also very interesting related research has been published by SOA, the Society of Actuaries, in 2025, because actually mental health is becoming a very important problem, not only in Australia, but also in US as well. So in that the research, they actually find that the social determinants of health, basically the socioeconomic status of people, have been a huge important variable of driving the mental health claims. But because the medical system in US and in Australia will be very different because, you know, in Australia, we have the Medicare system. And in US, they have the Medicaid and they have Medicare. They also have the Medicare, but it's not the same Medicare system as we have in Australia. So basically, people who have relied on the free Medicare, which is like the medical help support in US, have seen also very, very high claims rate in terms of mental health problem. So, and also a lot of U.S. The U.S. mental health problems have been also associated with all these like substance disorder, like, you know, misuse, like alcohol misuse, drug misuse. So these are like very different environment, but you can still see that the mental health problem has been an important issue, not only in Australia, but also in the worldwide. So here are key international insights as part of our research. We draw upon some international related experience. So insurance status is actually a strong predictor of receiving the mental health treatment. So basically, people who actually apply and receive the mental health treatment with the medical support actually is very positively associated with their insurance status. And in the U.S. study, their evidence actually show that insured individuals are significantly more likely to access the outpatient and prescription care. So basically, they have the insurance coverages. Of course, not all people in the U.S., they have insurance coverages. But if they have those, they are more likely to access these services. And also mental health care is highly cost sensitive. So basically you can see that mental health service is highly responsive to out-of-pocket costs. So basically, if you have deductibles, people are less reliant on these services. And so in the US market, they have designed like co-payments and benefit limits to adequately reduce or, you know, kind of control the moderate the utilization rate. And mental health care utilization appears also more sensitive to the insurance design, which is also the very important second part of our presentation today, design than the physical health care. So the emerging international approaches, so basically how they model these things in the U.S. market, so they actually apply the catastrophe, which is kind of CAT modeling, to consider these insurance coverage coverages for the mental health claims. So catastrophic illness coverage expansion and also public insurance reform, they need to work together to basically to help improvements not only in financial protection for these mental health claimants, but also the treatment uptake and also to ensure that affordability for especially vulnerable populations, vulnerable groups. So what about mental health in Australia? So for all of you already aware of the whole system in Australia, so you can see that to support people in terms of mental health support, you can see that Australian government is playing a very important role, right? So we have the Medicare benefit schedule, pharmaceutical benefit schedule schemes, and also the health networks. And also in the state and the territory government level, we also have public hospitals, emergency departments, and community mental health care. And also in the private sectors, there are also hospitals, crisis support, like in UNSW, we also have a very dedicated mental health research center called the Black Dog. So these are all the like community organizations, like community support, so in Australia available. And but essentially wanted to show you some data. So you can see that from the national survey, which is conducted by the Australian government in 2022, they actually surveyed the age group from 16 to 85. And you can see that the majority of the people, right, so you can see that they actually experienced mental illnesses, and only a certain proportion of them said that I never actually experienced any mental illness. And 39% of people aged 16 to 24, which is like relatively younger age, had a 12-month mental disorder. And 43% of people aged 16 to 85, cover the whole population, had experienced a mental disorder at some point in time in their life, right? So you can see that, and if we break it down a little bit, you can see that the most common illness in the past 12 months, including anxiety, mood disorder, substance use of the population. Basically, you can see that these are the key drivers, key common issues in the illness breakdown category. And the gender distribution is also very interesting. You can see that almost half of the females aged 16 to 24 and less males, like a third of males aged 16 to 24, have reported a 12-month mental disorder before. So you can see that if we can support these young adults at the early age, give some early interventions, potentially could help their mental health release and recovery. And so this is our research objectives and also how we got the data. So our research objective is, of course, we know the insurance population is, of course, not the same as the whole population, but this method, we can actually start with a general public data set, like with the whole population, and trying to quantify the prevalence rate. And then from the prevalence rate, we can build the incident curve and also try to see the persistency of these mental disorders across different age groups. And want to also examine the comorbidity, right? So we have the mental health problem, also the physical co-occurrence. So how these conditions play together. And also identify critical intervention points based on the age of onset analysis. We see that, yes, some of the mental health disorders develop at a young age, but how much, right? How we actually build a model to quantify and to build a whole curve. So this is a joint academic industry research project by UNSW and Mike Noyce Consulting. So we actually use, because of the data is like the public data, but we still need to apply for access. So at this point, we have been only granted the access to the 2007 National Survey of the Mental Health Wellbeing Dataset. So in this dataset, we analyzed 8,400 people that they surveyed, and they actually, you know, put some population weighted and survey weights. You actually can see that they represent more than 15 million of Australian people represented. So this survey was conducted by using some really, really medical methodology, diagnosis methodology, which is very scientific, and they actually represent 60% of response rate and also the survey weighting. So you can see that the current mental disorder prevalence, right? So we can see the pie chart here. Pie chart here tell us that 20 percent of the adult population confirm mental disorders as highly prevalent conditions, right? So 20% of them. And also among the affected individuals, mild symposium represent around 10%, moderate 6%, and severe symptoms 4%. And also mild to moderate conditions only recognized as minor, but they actually comprise approximately 80% of all the current cases. So basically, it tells us that the most affected individuals have these minor symptom levels. And also, there are standard errors, but basically, I actually see that it's quite robust in terms of giving the whole picture of the whole population. And so because we only have access to the 2007 survey data, but we wanted to compare with the 2022 mental health survey data on a high level, but we don't actually have access to the individual level data set. So we actually compare that at a high level. So basically, you can see that if we conduct the age band population comparison from 2022 and 2007. So you can see that 25 prevalence has been increased. So this has been reported a increase in prevalence, like 25% of the young adults age 18 to 24 has suffered this mental health disorder. And age 18 to 24 carries the highest burden, and also they experience minor disorders, and 3% to 7% experiencing major disorders. And the age-related pattern, you can see that the pattern is, of course, compared to 2007, these prevalence rates have increased significantly, which, of course, after the COVID, as our expectation. But you can see the pattern is still the same. So that's why we think our methodology, when we get access to the individual level data set in 2022, we can still apply the same methodology. So this age-related pattern basically tell us that the mental disorders predominantly, again, emerge in early age and tend to attenuate with increasing age, right? So people in later ages, they don't actually have a lot of mental disorders compared to younger ages. And recovery remission from serious mental illness increased steadily after the early adulthood. And also, it's like the remission rates is actually nearly 60%. So if we take a look at the age band survey, because we only wanted to focus the younger adults and later age, right, from 16 to 85. So you can see that in 2022, the lifetime prevalence actually decreased compared to 2007. So from 45 to slightly dropped to 43. And the 12-month prevalence actually increased from 20 to 21%. And the severity mix has been changed from like in these 15 years again. So mild cases drop a little bit, moderate cases slightly increase, and also severe cases actually increase a lot. So the aggregate prevalence appears stable after 15 years, but you can see that the earlier, right? So if you take a look at the like the left-hand side bar, so you can see that there has been a lot of earlier onsets concentrated on the young adults. And basically, this is gave us also, if they actually experience and report mental health stress at a young age, so we can actually expect that the claim duration and recurrence in their later age will become severe as well, right? So this is the survival framework, which is a little bit technical, using the Kaplan-Meier framework. So basically, what we do is we have the prevalence rate, but then trying to build the whole incident rate given different ages. We use these the mental health. We use the time to event using modeling the onset age and try to build this Kaplan-Meier, the whole curve. And then this is our cumulative incident curve using the prevalence rate of 2007. So you can see that when we build this cumulative incidence curve, we can see that 35% of probability getting the mental health disorder by age 25. And another probability of onset by age 85 is 54%. And the chance of remaining getting some disorder is also modeled in our model. So basically, you can see that from the prevalence rate is now allowing us to build this cumulative incidence curve. So now I'll hand over to Dorothy to add some industry insights.
Thank you. Thanks, Xiao. Thanks for setting the scene. So I will continue sharing the some of the results and relate back to our industry and how we apply them. So based on that cumulative instance rates, we have now derived the instance curve. So this is per instance rates per 1,000 person and per year. So it's an annual rate. We did group the age bands to remove some of the noise, but immediately I think that the pricing actuaries can cite from this chart that it's very different curve shape to traditionally what we see in disability insurance. So whether that is TBD or IP, we typically have an upward trending curve where the mental health conditions tends to be downward trending. So I also wanted to draw your special attention to the gender splits. I think this is, so the male incidence rates is higher for 18 to 24. That is probably contradictory to my traditional analogy of like mental health being more prone to women. So I digged into a bit more on what's the constitution of that. That spike of excess incidence rates are more driven by the substance abuse. That is more prone to men than women. So if we break it down by the subcategories in the mental health condition, the mood disorders like the anxieties and depression, they are still traditionally more, it's still in line with what we traditionally known as its higher incidence rate for women instead. And also it's more recurrent and persistent. So again, the shape kind of explains the cumulative incidence rise where you have a very high acceleration at a young age. And then it's sort of the incidence rate dies down as the age goes. Okay. So this is what I want to draw out. We didn't derive the incidence rate for physical conditions, because the survey data and the insurance data is probably quite different. But I just wanted to plot the prevalence rate here to at least explain what we are dealing with here. So in here for the red line, I have chosen the NHPA, which is a definition that was used in the 2007 mental health survey. What constitutes in that physical conditions are more of the cardio diseases, the cancers, kidney diseases, and diabetes. So I think there are seven chronic diseases that are being included in there. And it's also quite common claim causes for our disability claims as a proxy. And the mental health with a 12-month prevalence rate. So that means the survey has asked the participants whether you have experienced mental health condition in the past 12 months. So with this curve, as you can see, there are quite different risk portfolios. So with the peak age for mental health is still being very young, the 18 to 24, and for the physical age is actually 65 to 85. And also the nature of it is quite different too. So for mental health, it seems to be more episodic, recurrent, and it does impact people's functional life and work. But for physical illness, it's more progressive, chronic, and is likely to receive hospital treatments. And these are some scary stats that we draw from the one of the KPMG and Cali paper. So, yeah, big numbers. So this is saying, so from 2014 to 2022, mental health TBD claim cost has increased by 433%. And for IP of that same period, it increased by 129%. And just for TBD, age 30 to 40, that rises by 732%. And then 79.6% of the TBD claims growth is attributable to mental health. So, I mean, even with these statistics that it's cutting back to 2022, it's probably not taking into account of the recent economic slowdowns and how that correlates to the IP and TBD claim rates. Like, there is a previous concurrent sessions that topics on that. So I think the industry are playing catch-ups. Okay, so these slides, I'm trying to draw out some of the difficulties our industry faces. Firstly, the subjectivity. So I think when the IP and TBD claim, products were initially designed, they were designed more for the physical conditions. And the assessments of claim assessments for physical conditions are likely to be more objective, whereas the mental health claims inherently more subjective in assessments. And there are people that genuinely claiming for TBD that is mental health, have severe mental health that impacts their life and work. But there are also people, because of the enlightened moral hazards that with a large lump sum payment payout, there are people that probably also get the TBD and just get back to their work. So all of these are compounded by the growing recognition for mental health as a legitimate disability affecting life and work. The second point I want to draw out is with the distribution channel. Large amount of life insurance in Australia is sold through advisors, and advisors are bounded by the best interest duty. So the insurer acting alone to exclude or restrict mental health cover expose them to limiting or losing market share potentially, because it's harder for the financial advisor to satisfy best interest duty. Although having said that, I think that I've seen some recent movements on the product fronts of excluding or tightening the mental health definition, but we do have to recognize that there is a first mover disadvantage. A third point is the mispriced risks. So I think this is kind of ties back to what we shared before. Traditionally, how we price IP and TBD is through historical experience studies. And in that experience studies, we're likely to bundle all types of disabilities together. So you can see that having a different shape of mental health risks with others, it potentially flatten the incidence curve. And because the mental health part is fast growing and having a higher weight in our total claims cost, we may be playing a catch-up game in the and underpriced for the earlier ages. So that's kind of the risk, that the pricing risk I want to highlight in that. And of course, solving that, you'll need to have clear data structures, especially recording of the first primary reasons for claiming TBD and IP. So I do recognize that it is very hard to untangle mental health claims with other claims. And the fourth point I want to draw out is the growing regulatory and reputational pressure. So I think this is a hidden cost for the industry, where sometimes that the insurers are needed to pay out even if the claims are not meeting the definitions, because they are, and it's especially after the class actions on CommInsure, and I think people are more, insurers are more aware of it, and the regulatory regulators are also putting pressures. And here is some of my reflections for the industry practice. These are just a fruits of thoughts. It probably doesn't have any concrete solution to the industry problems. So first thing I think is for the pricing actuary can do is separate mental health from physical morbidity studies. This provides the organization with clear cost estimates of how mental claims are contributing to the overall cost of TBD and IP. As I said, that this is because it is dependent on the data. So I think one step is probably to regulate and how or align how the data entry is being put forward first before this analysis can be enabled. Second point is about having the gender risk separation. As you can see, there are different causations of why the instance shape is, even for mental health claim, the instance rate shape might be different between gender. So if the data allow, you can also dive into different type of mental health conditions like the mood disorders separating from, for example, substance use. The third point is actually it's about a product, action. So one thing we can try to do is having a separate definition for mental health condition. I think that some life insurers are already moving towards that direction, but maybe the problem with the mental health product definition is that it's too subjective. So whether we can make it a bit more objective in claims, at claims time, for example, aligning to more the ADL type of definition rather than the NAOC or UNOC type of definition. Or we can price it separately. If the pricing separation is successful and is more solid ground to price what is a option for mental health take up. The fourth point is claims and underwriting. So that is another two risk levers that a life insurer can pull apart from product and pricing. So because a lot of these mental conditions are having early onset between 18 to 25, a lot of them theoretically can be covered under pre-existing conditions. So the question is how effective it is. And I think it's a balancing act between claims and underwriting in terms of how to manage and help the IP and TBD become more sustainable. Sorry, I have one more point to add. So a lot of these recommendations sounds like it's taking the lens of life insurer. But the problem is that because the cost is being spread to the rest of the industry and the excessive. So for mental health claimants also, whether life insurance is at its current form is giving its best support to them. I think that's a question mark. So I think I'm not saying that mental health claims are not legitimate claims. It's more just how do we actually make a more sustainable environment for the others to take up life insurance. Okay, so some honest limitations on this work as well. The 2007 mental health survey data is self-reported on site. So that is someone recalling what's their first episode and when was it. That is definitely subject to bias. And then the cross-sectional design. So this survey is done at a point in time. So it's at 2007. So that's there are later surveys in 2022, which we are still getting hold of that data. And also this data is before COVID, so it's likely that it haven't taken into account of the excessive incidence rates during the COVID period. And even after that, the economic conditions and adding on the financial stress of the households. And the survey versus insured population, of course, this is based on the 2007 population data. So there is recognition here that the insured population might be quite different because there are selection risks happening with the underwriting. And also the on-site before insurable age. So that's another difference that will contribute to the insurance data versus the population data, because a lot of the people already having the condition may have blanket exclusions at the insurance data set. And some of the next steps, we're trying to get a hold of the 2022 microdata like Xiao was mentioning. So we're aiming to apply the same methodology on the more newer data sets. And also we wanted to do a bit more work on just studying the recurrence and persistent patterns. So this presentation has been solely focused on the onset. And the segment by mental health condition type. So that's another thing that once we get the more detailed data, we can actually have in the different incidence rates by subcategories of a mental health condition. And also link back to insured population data. We don't have them, but we are definitely open to conversations if anyone wanted to do any collaboration work after this. That's the last slide. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Xiao and Dorothy. That was a very fascinating presentation. I'm conscious we've only got 7 minutes left, so let's get straight into the questions. So we've got a lot of questions from the floor. It was a great presentation. Personally, the slide with all the formulas, take that one or leave it. I found it a bit tough. So I'll pick some questions. I'm sorry, I probably won't get to all of the questions. The population incidence of mental health was shown to decline with age. Is it the same with insurance claim incidence for mental health?
So we have seen consistent patterns, at least for the population data. It's a tough question to answer because I haven't really seen the insured data with mental health conditions separated. So I think that is something for everyone to verify, because the industry does have that underlying data set of who are claiming TBD or IP.
Thanks, Dorothy. Just a quick question I had was, you mentioned this was based on the 2007 data. Is that the 2022 data that you mentioned? Is that the catch-up data? And when do you think that might become available?
That's the next iteration data set, but because we have limited access to the recent government data right now, so we apply for that and have been placed in a queue as one of the GO8 universities. But yes, we can see that on a high level, like aggregate report, that it's the similar pattern. So that's why we're confident that we probably will just adapt the current methodology onto the more recent data when we have access to that. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Do you believe this data is sufficient to use for pricing and or to perform product permutations, perhaps?
It's yes and no, because there are definitely restrictions that I have highlighted. So I think the methodology itself is probably fine, like the Kaplan-Miller approach to adopt and to study that, or acting as a benchmark. But there is genuine differences between the insured population and also the survey data, and not to speak, the survey data is in 2007. So yes, I think the methodology and the shapes are probably adoptable, but not the actual level of the instance rate.
Thanks, Dorothy. This question is a bit topical, and I think as parents, we may all sympathise with this one. Did the research attribute the mental disorders at young ages to the impact of social media?
It is a very good question. The honest answer is that we don't have evidence to support that. But it is because in the survey data, we don't get to see the why and what's the reason they are having the mental health conditions. But Yeah, just with a general knowledge, I would say yes. It is adding everyone's stress and being the perfect person on the social media.
Yeah, I just quickly add that if you are interested, you can take a look at the SOA Mental Health Underwriting Report, because they have like individual socioeconomic status. So you actually see like people who live in a lower socioeconomic status environment typically have like more suffering of the mental health conditions, which is quite as our expectation. But because in our data set, it's only the survey data, so we didn't really include more variables that's not available to us yet.
Thanks, Dr. Xiao. A question for... Oh, sorry, I just lost it. I just lost my questions. Just, Dorothy, you said that... I think you mentioned that claims is currently doing a catch-up. What did you mean by that?
So what I mean by that is that the industry normally prices it using historical experience. And what's reflecting is historical experience probably haven't gotten the acceleration of the recent economic stress and also the, the financial stress from people. So I think because mental health claims are fast growing, as some age blankets is 732%. So I suspect that if you were only looking at historical data, it's probably not capturing the future trend.
Yeah, I guess I had a question as well. Dorothy, one of your recommendations and suggestions was that you price the mental illness component separately and understand it more clearly in the pricing process. Would you envisage that that might follow through in the way that, say, life insurers submit their proposal to the customer such that the pricing is clearly visible for the contribution of the mental illness?
Thanks. That's a really good question too. So I think it needs some coordination between the distribution channel and the life insurance product and pricing team, because one of the risks that I think that it's probably a fair option for the customers to take up, or whether they wanted to pay extra for mental health. But one of the risks that life insurer will face in that situation is the advice, and it will create a lot of gray areas for the advice and whether the life insurer will ultimately still pay some of the claims that are not supposed to be covered under the product condition. And I think that's the coordination that needs to be carefully managed.
Okay. I'm conscious that we're getting close to the end of time. I've got one more question, and I'm sort of synthesising across multiple of the questions from the floor here, but there are people asking questions for you, perhaps around, you could give some insight as to your ability to see in the data the question of permanence of mental illness. And I wonder whether that came through the data in any way, or you were able to understand this.
The persistence.
Yeah, permanence, the question of permanence.
Permanence. Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. It's like this type of question here. From the research, is there a view or a way to establish permanence in mental health?
Because it is a cross-sectional data, it doesn't track individuals throughout a period of time. So it's a bit hard to just envisage that from the current data set that we have. With the prevalence rate dropping, so I think there's one slide we're showing that the prevalence rate for mental health is inverted. I mean, there are different factors that goes into that, right? Like for the older populations, they're probably Gen X. That's why I'm doing my math. And versus people are 18 and 25, they are different, they have different lifestyles. And so whether the prevalence rates are directly comparable, that's a question. But we do see the prevalence was dropping with age. So I don't have a firm answer for that. But I guess that people can interpolate from what we are showing in the statistics.
There are questions answering, like, have you suffered these mental health conditions like 5 years ago? So basically that's help us construct this variable, which is recovery rate. But in terms of the permanent, we can actually, I think, some proxy modeling approach. Yeah.
Okay. And is there any insight on the changes in prevalence and duration due to actual underlying changes in mental health versus the increase in people being more aware of their mental health? Is it related to awareness?
I think it is, because if you take a look at the mental health survey, happened in 2022 compared to 2007, like 15 years gap, there's definitely has been, I would say, increasing awareness is one of the reasons that all the prevalence rates have gone up. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I would like to thank Dr. Zhao and Dorothy for an excellent presentation and a great contribution to the Actuary Summit 2026. Please join me in thanking the presenters.